Hello and welcome back to this conference. My name is Jai Bristow and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am very, very pleased to be welcoming the wonderful Hania Opienski. Welcome, Hania.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi. So Hania, you are a woman of many talents. You are the founder of Supernatural Health and a holistic healer, where you're a naturopathic nutritionist, a TCM acupuncturist, a life alignment healing practitioner and teacher, and a heart math coach and mentor. So I'm excited to find out a bit more about what all those are and how they can be applied to healing toxic relationships. So do you want to get us going by talking a bit about what toxic relationships means to you? What does this theme or this word of toxicity evoke in you in terms of your line of work?
Sure, thank you. So I think kind of at its root, if I think about, you know, what is a toxic relationship, it's anything that takes one out of the present, takes one away from homeostasis, from nervous system balance, and kind of creates an imbalance. And that can be on any level. So physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. And then that's something that then, you know, of course, we're going to be coming in and out all the time, but something that is perpetuating a state of imbalance or a state of nervous system overactivation, or, you know, a continual like drive to be making choices in your lifestyle, in how you interact with others, in your food choices, in your self-care or lack of self-care, that over a period of time are going to have a detrimental effect to any of those aspects of being. And the continuation of that is something that I would say is a toxic relationship with yourself.
I think that's such a great definition, right? Because it's not so much looking at the symptoms of, oh, this such and such is a toxic relationship, or that's a toxic relationship. It's kind of coming into the root cause of, like, it's toxicity is basically an imbalance within yourself. And then that can play out into all these different ways that we've talked about, that I've talked about in this conference with different people. And it can play out in your relationships with others, as well as your relationship with food, your relationship with the environment, your relationship and all your relationship with yourself, right? So do you want to talk a bit about these imbalances? Like, what happens in the nervous system? What are physiological responses? How do we recognize when we're out of balance and we're having a sort of toxic relationship or toxicity present in our relationships?
Certainly. Now, I think for me, something that really helped me start getting an understanding of this was when I studied Chinese medicine. And before, you know, it's like I might have some physiological symptoms, I might have some stress or some, you know, tendency to ways of thinking or like my sleep pattern. And I, you know, I thought of them as all separate things. And then when I learned Chinese medicine, you learn that actually there's a correlation between particular emotions and particular organs of the body, between particular emotions and particular aspects of personality type, particular mental activities, and then an impact physically on the body. And I started realizing that, you know, a lot of the things that I might have thought of as separate symptoms were actually part of these very these unified patterns of disharmony, they're called in Chinese medicine. And so I started seeing, actually, it's not that there's like 10 different things wrong with me. It's actually that I have a pattern of, or I'm displaying a pattern of, say, liver qi stagnation, which could include everything from PMS, being a bit impatient, waking up at 3 a.m, tendency to tight muscles, tendency to one-sided headaches, being someone who really wants to make progress and has quick ideas and gets frustrated when things don't flow, to someone who gets eye twitching, you know, all of these things that seem quite disparate, they were actually just part of one pattern that were ways that this was manifesting on a physical, on an emotional, on a mental level. And that kind of understanding of the how, you know, we're not just a physical body, we're not, you know, our mind isn't separate from the body, that all of these things are interconnected. And when you kind of start seeing that, then you can see, actually, I know that when I'm, you know, getting like eye twitches, or those months when I do have PMS and I have pain, it's like, okay, so this is a sign that actually, you know, I'm not managing my stress, or that this is a time when it's like, okay, if I know that my liver qi is more stagnated, this is not the the time to have lots of processed food. It's not the time for me to have alcohol. This is the time for me to do some stretching. This is the time for me to make sure that I have positive connections with people, that maybe if I'm going to do movement, I don't do something linear that creates more sort of tension and kind of rigidity, but I do some dancing or some swimming or some yoga or something that is actually going to move my chi and do some kind of crossbody movements, which is actually what then gets the liver chi flowing. So it's a way of, yeah, kind of seeing these connections and then having a tool that then allows you to go, ah, okay, now I know how I can look after myself.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. It's really interesting how you're talking about like liver qi or spleen qi, and qi being more the energetic or the energetics linked to the organ as opposed to the physical organ itself, but how it is still all interconnected, right? How do you assess then when something's out of balance? If it's not looking at the physicality, how do you tell, oh, there's some imbalance, this is what we're going to treat, oh, and the imbalance is linked to liver qi or spleen qi or whichever other ones there are?
Yeah, so it's not that you don't look at the physical or focus on the physical. It's just that you look at that as kind of part of a wider picture. So it's always taking the holistic view. So, you know, the physical is important. And of course, if someone comes to see a Chinese medicine practitioner, you know, you want to take into consideration the symptoms that they're actually feeling and do something to help them feel better. But it's like, you know, if someone is coming in with a very physical symptom, you know, as a Chinese medicine practitioner, you would also then check, it sounds like it's this pattern. Let me check, are there other physical symptoms? Are there mental or emotional symptoms that would generally, you know, flesh out this pattern? So you can actually see, yes, this is actually what's happening. So you get that, you know, you take in that broader picture, you're looking at that holistic view. And then, you know, with treatment, of course, the most obvious and most common Chinese medicine treatment is either acupuncture or herbs. Acupuncture is more working at the qi, at the energy level, and herbs are working more at the kind of organ visceral level. So it'll depend again on what someone's pattern of disharmony is like what you might choose to use, or, you know, often use a combination. But I think it's also really important. And one of the things that now, you know, I apply in a kind of coaching and mentoring capacity, both, you know, when I see Chinese medicine clients, but also if I'm working with someone for naturopathy or, you know, health and well-being mentoring, is this aspect of when you understand like what the signs are and the triggers, then it's like, you know, the idea is, well, something I really want to do is actually give some power back to the individual. And it's not just come and see me and get acupuncture every week and keep doing what you're doing, and I will just be resetting the balance, because, you know, that person has actually got things going on in their life or in their mind or in their food choices or their movement choices or lack thereof or their stress levels that is creating the imbalance. So I think that it's really important to educate people and say, look, when you're getting these signs, look at, you know, how much sugar are you eating? How much are you sitting? Are you doing a lot of mental work? Do you have, you know, someone that you can share your emotions with, or are they all just kind of rushing around in your head and, you know, you're just, you know, stuck in a loop? And so, you know, actually, you know, getting people to notice, okay, so I'm getting sugar cravings, or I'm getting into these cyclical thoughts, then you start going, okay, so this means, you know, my spleen qi is out of balance. What can I do to look after myself? So, you know, a little bit of something sweet, maybe like root vegetables, that's going to have a nourishing effect on the spleen. But kind of going full out on, oh my God, I'm just going to eat loads of chocolate and drink loads of wine. And, you know, it feels like you're listening to your body and you're kind of going with your impulse, but actually you're then feeding into the imbalance, because too much sugar actually, you know, we know physiologically upsets your pancreas. So we'd say too much sweet stuff actually, you know, perpetuates that spleen qi imbalance and is then going to make you more stressed and more emotionally undigested, because you're kind of exacerbating. So actually getting some understanding for people so they can actually do some self-care, or knowing that, you know, spleen is activated by too much thinking, too much stress. So it's like, okay, well, what are the things that I can do at the end of the day to help myself calm down and get out of this sort of mental loop? Do something physical, get a hug, get a massage, go for a walk, do something mindless. And so that's something that I really, you know, appreciate about this, and how I can then use it to help people help themselves and not just be the one that's trying to, you know, people are coming at me to fix them, and they're not recognizing that they actually have a lot of, you know, power to start helping themselves. And that's also part of the toxic relationship, I think, when people feel like, they're just stuck, they're a victim, they want someone else to fix them. And actually, the more that you can start learning about, okay, well, what's going on in me, that I can actually start taking responsibility and looking after myself. And that is a way not of creating, blaming yourself, but actually going, oh no, I have some power, I have some agency here to start changing my own health and well-being.
I think that's so great. I love that you brought that piece in, you know, that your role isn't just to fix people, fix big quote marks here for anyone who can't see me, but that it's more empowering people to take responsibility and find balance for themselves, right? And again, I guess that's where the holistic approach comes in as well, because finding balance is finding balance in all areas. You know, we already talked about like physical, emotional, spiritual, all of that kind of thing, but it's also, you've talked a lot about like food, you've talked about thoughts and patterns, you've talked about, you know, going for a walk and exercising. Like, there's so many different ways of finding that balance, and I think it's really important to bring in. And I love what you were saying about like a very, you know, fundamental toxic trait that we can have is going into like the victim cycle, you know. And I've touched upon a little bit the drama triangle with a few people, which is right, the sort of victim, perpetrator, hero roles, and how you can sort of switch and put people in those and take those on. That's often a very sort of toxic cycle. And I like how you're saying, you know, how people can identify as a victim and want other people to just fix them. And I think that can happen a lot in these kind of these events, these conferences. People are looking for the answer, looking for the right practitioner, the person that's going to resolve it, fix them, cure them, the magic pill, the magic wand. And so instead, taking time to look at ourselves, and it can be really painful and uncomfortable, but taking time to like look at oneself and notice where the imbalances are, taking responsibility and starting to find more balance in that way, which will hopefully then have a positive impact on all our relationships with ourselves. If we start with ourselves, it will have a positive ripple effect outwards with all our relationships. So once we recognize that we have imbalance and we recognize that that's a very unhealthy state to be in and that it can like perpetuate itself, right? Once we start having some imbalance in some areas, that it will perpetuate, and especially in relationships, seeing as that's what we're talking about here today, if you have imbalance in yourself and you start being very irritable or something, it will have a negative ripple effect on all your relationships. So once we've established that, how do we start finding that balance? How do we start healing in a holistic way?
Yeah. So I think, you know, if we're looking at toxic relationship with oneself, then I think the really, you know, a really important step is, you know, is awareness. I think, you know, a lot of people are quite unconscious of their patterns, of their thought patterns, of the things that drive their behaviors. And we talked about, you know, the victim mode. A lot of that is kind of believing, you know, oh, I'm a victim of my circumstances. Oh, this always happens to me. And oh, I knew this was going to happen. And I, you know, I can't do anything about it. I'm in this difficult situation. I've got a challenging boss. I've got a bullying partner, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, it might be objectively true that you're in a challenging situation, or you have a, you know, an overbearing boss or a, you know, bullying partner, but how you are responding to that and the beliefs that you have about your capacity or your ability, you know, your victimhood in that situation, you know, are a part of that dynamic. And so actually starting to recognize, well, how do I think about myself? What are the beliefs I have about myself? What is the voice in my head, this inner critic, also called superego, that is actually reinforcing these ideas of self? You know, it's like, I think a lot of, I know for myself and, you know, for a lot of women particularly, but, you know, lots of people, there is this, you know, internalized belief of, you know, I need to be good. I need to be a nice person. I need to be accommodating. I need to respect authority. I want to avoid conflict. I want to be liked. And it's like, these can all seem like things that, yeah, they are going to ease social interactions. And, you know, as a child, they were needed. You know, you needed to respect your parents, respect teachers, learn the rules. You didn't want to get punished. You didn't want to get excluded. And it's like, you know, it was a survival mechanism then. And so it was really important for you as a child to learn those rules and create this, like, you know, this internalized parent is another way of looking at the superego, that, you know, this is something that protects you. It, you know how to act. You have this little voice in your head that goes, oh, this is appropriate. Oh, this is not. This is going to keep me safe. This is going to make sure I don't get sent to my room. I don't get punished. And it's really useful. And so, you know, so this is not a, you know, I'm not inviting you to beat yourself up even more about the fact that you have these tendencies. And, you know, of course, there are many others. I'm just talking about one version of this. But when we become an adult, you know, those things that kept us safe as a kid are not necessarily helpful for us. It's like, you know, for me, I know that I, and, you know, from being, you know, having the this, you know, good girl archetype, found that I kept ending up in situations where I had, you know, bosses or managers that were asking too much of me, that were expecting too much, that were piling work on me. And because I had this, you know, this, and it was so automatic, this thing of like, oh, I want to meet expectations. I want to exceed expectations. I don't want to create conflict. I respect authority. I want to be liked. You know, I don't want to put anyone else out. You know, I ended up burning out because I was so much trying to accommodate to what was being asked of me and didn't have those boundaries to say, actually, no, this is not okay. And I was picking up the slack for, you know, other colleagues who, you know, had better boundaries or didn't have this, you know, good girl thing. And were like, nah, it's, you know, I'm not doing overtime. It's too much. Or no, I can't do this. It's too difficult. I just felt like, no, I'm clever. I'm smart. I want to be liked. I'm going to, you know, spend extra time and I'm going to, you know, expend extra mental energy to learn these things, to do things well, to take on the extra work. And I, you know, I literally burnt myself out. And at the time I didn't, you know, I thought, you know, it was because I was in a challenging situation, because there was too much work, because, you know, oh, the business was expanding. And so therefore, you know, there wasn't enough staff. But it was like, retrospectively, I can see, no, that was actually part of my toxic relationship with myself, of the fact that I wasn't able to say, this is my boundary. I need support. This is not okay. This is as much as I can handle. And, you know, at that point I was, you know, a naturopath and an acupuncturist. So it was like, you know, I was doing the Tai Chi and eating the good diet and trying, you know, trying to get the movement and doing all the things. And that meant that I could cope for a long time because I had a lot of, you know, good habits that supported me, but I didn't have, you know, that internal peace, that self-awareness and that kind of compassion towards myself, that actually, you know, it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to have some conflict if it is encroaching on my mental, emotional and, you know, physical well-being. And so that actually, what, you know, I can see now that that was a toxic relationship, but I was so completely unaware of it. So that first step is like starting to get aware, you know, it's like, what are the, you know, what's the voice in my head? What are the beliefs that I have about myself that dictate my behavior, that are contributing to situations where, you know, maybe external toxic relationships? It's like you always, in any toxic relationship, you are always at the root of that and you have a level of responsibility. And so starting to recognize that, this is not another way to then say, oh, let me beat myself up more. Oh, I'm, you know, I'm in an abusive relationship and it's my fault. No, but it's like, if I'm, you know, if you're in a relationship that's abusive, most people are in an abusive relationship with themselves. If you think about the way that, you know, your inner critic talks to you and the harshness and the criticism and the judgment and the finding fault, it's like recognizing that is the first step. And then kind of getting a bit of distance and a bit of compassion for, you know, this scared little voice that's trying to keep you safe, but is actually really creating quite a lot of stress and toxicity.
100%. I think that I was really struck by that. Most of us are in an abusive relationship with ourselves. And it's so true. Here we are, you know, talking about toxic and abusive relationships with everyone else. But it's like, hold on, most of the time we are our own worst critic. And yes, we can look at where that comes from and stuff. But first, like you say, we have to be aware of that. So thank you for bringing in that piece. And thank you for sharing some of your own journey and your own stories and your own, like, becoming aware of how you and like so many of us were like in a state of blame, and that you were doing all the right things. And so that reinforces this idea of like, I'm trying to find balance, I'm eating well, I'm doing all those things, and that grows your capacity, which is fantastic. But if you're still judging yourself and still in that state of like, whenever something goes wrong, I'm the victim, other people are to blame, the circumstances are to blame, the, you know, everyone keeps piling work on me, and that we don't take that kind of responsibility, I think is a really uncomfortable but important area to look at. And I'm reminded of the conversation I had with Raffaella Fiallo about like self-fulfilling prophecies, right? And the stories we tell ourselves and breaking those. And I'm reminded of a conversation I had with Dr. Betty Martin, who talks about our internal landscape as our right, but also our responsibility. So I also recommend people check out those talks amongst other fantastic talks. So Hania, thank you for bringing that in. So that recognition of, you know, we're at the root of a lot of our toxic relationships, partly because we're often in an abusive relationship with ourselves, and that requires a lot of work and healing primarily. What are some of the other elements that you want to bring in, or some of the other steps?
Yeah, so I think, you know, as I said, that that awareness and getting you know, conscious of that voice in the head, like what you bring into consciousness, is a really important first step. And then, you know, I mentioned briefly, but I think compassion is really important. Like, I know when I first started doing kind of, you know, inner critic work and getting more conscious of this voice in my head and how I was judging myself and others and everything, then I then got a secondary, you know, we could call it a superego attack, of then telling myself off for having these judgments, for, you know, having these negative beliefs, for ending up in the same situation of going, oh, I know that, you know, I've given my power away again, I've been too accommodating. And so it's very easy, once you start becoming aware, to then have more self-attack. So the next thing that's really important is to actually really learn compassion. And, you know, and you've really got to point that towards yourself. Yes, if you're very judgmental of other people and you find yourself being really irritable and critical, then, you know, that's also really useful to notice, because you can see, oh, actually, I'm not being compassionate to them. And the criticism and the judgment I have of them is often something in myself that I don't like, that I'm projecting out. And so that's really useful. But then also, again, when you notice that, this is not enough, you know, it's not an invitation to then, you know, beat yourself up about that too. It's like, this is, you know, awareness, learning, and bringing compassion in. So I think that's, you know, that's the next step. And then there's a couple of tools that I found really helpful with, actually, once you have the awareness, once, you know, you're kind of familiar with these patterns, and, you know, just getting familiar is a great step. And it gives you a little bit of distance, but you will find that these things run on automatic, and it takes a lot of willpower and concentration and effort to not just follow that kind of, you know, snowballing effect. And so a couple of things I find are really helpful for interrupting that process, or actually starting or continuing the healing process. So one is a process of inquiry. And this is a, you know, a spiritual practice inquiry. And so it's, you know, normally done with one or sometimes two or a group of people. And it's a process where you are really checking in with your reactions to what's going on in the moment. And so it can be, you know, an opportunity to actually explore something. And, you know, if you're with a partner or partners, it's very different than being with a counselor or being with a friend, because the setup with this is that anyone who is a partner is just holding space. They are observing themselves. They are just, you know, giving you space to explore without actually trying to give you advice or having their own reactions. Or, you know, ideally, you know, your partners would not be, you know, nodding or smiling or making facial expressions, because, you know, that's all their own reactions, but to just really be holding space for you. And you get the opportunity to explore something with other people there. So it's not just a little voice in your head. And initially I was like, isn't this just a mental exercise? But then I realized, no, it's important on a number of different levels, because when you really can engage with it, it's an opportunity to actually check in with, what is my physical response to what I'm talking about? It's sensing your body. And that's been a huge practice for me with supporting healing my toxic relationship with myself. But, you know, inquiry is an opportunity to be exploring something, checking in with, what is my body reaction to this? And it's also voicing stuff that, you know, it's probably stuff that you have self-criticism about, and it's voicing it in front of other people. So, you know, all of the shame and the embarrassment that you're like wanting to hide, these parts of oneself that you think that you judge, and therefore you fear that other people are going to judge. Actually, the process of doing that with a witness who is not reacting and is not kind of either rejecting you or trying to make you feel better, that's very liberating. And that, you know, for me, I find that just that process of having that space, that held space to explore something, it shifts something. You know, I realize I can share this and I don't die from shame. I can share this and, you know, the other person doesn't reject me, or the other person doesn't try and shut me down by trying to make everything better. And then you swap. And so then you actually hear other people's, you know, inner world, and you start realizing, oh my God, I'm not the only one who thinks this way. I'm not the only one that has all of these beliefs or these self-judgments, or kind of has, you know, all of this kind of inner crap that just feel, when it's all in your head, it just feels like, oh my God, I'm the only one. I'm a, you know, horrible person, or a weak person, or whatever, you know, the message is to yourself. And actually having, you know, someone hold that for you and hold yourself, and then hearing other people's, and having the opportunity to kind of be with that and to be checking in with yourself. Like, how am I responding? What are my judgments? What does that do to my body while I'm listening? And, you know, I just find it such a, it's one of the practices that I find really helps me become really present when I'm really taking that opportunity to be checking in on all these different levels, either whether I'm the one sharing or I'm the one holding space. And yeah, so I'd say that's the first practice that I really appreciate. And then the second thing, which is something that, you know, I also can do for myself, thankfully, but that I, you know, I work more with clients, would be life alignment. So this is a healing modality that, yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that has really, you know, had some like sort of pivotal healing moments for me kind of in my life. And it's a modality that brings in, again, it's a holistic healing method. So there is a cognitive, you know, working with understanding from a mental level, but the healing happens through then connecting that kind of mental understanding with a felt sense experience and with the emotions that are, you know, held in the body. So it's like, you know, when we have, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, there is a connection between the physical and the, you know, the mental emotional, but that we're looking at them as kind of, you know, separate, you know, sort of parts of a pattern. But actually, when we have, you know, mental, emotional experiences, they actually get locked in the body. And that then has an impact on the physiology. And so, you know, this life alignment as a healing system is actually bringing those things together and actually finding, okay, so you've identified a belief about yourself, you've identified a story that puts you in victim mode, that, you know, takes you out of connection with yourself. But then it's like, okay, well, what's the feeling? That's the next step we look at. Well, what's the feeling that this story, this belief creates in you? And then to actually really feel what that does. And then through the process of the healing process, you're then actually releasing not just the belief, but also the emotion where that's trapped in your cellular memory, and allowing that to, yeah, to be digested, to be dissolved from the body, so that then you can then think about the same experience or kind of, you know, check in with that same belief, but then there isn't that same visceral emotional response in the body. So that for me has been something that, you know, is so healing. It's not just an understanding level. It's a connecting with the emotion, connecting with the physical sensations, and then allowing that release from the body. And that then creates, again, a shift out of that, you know, reactive state into, you know, a real state of presence and release.
Incredible. Thank you so much. I really appreciate what you were sharing around, you know, as we become aware of these judgmental voices and our abusive relationship with ourselves and this inner critic or superego, or all these different names that can be used for it, that sometimes that actually the first step of becoming aware of it isn't necessarily feeling freedom from it. It's actually having more voices suddenly telling us that we're bad for having these bad thoughts, right? So there's an extra layer of judgment, of criticism towards ourselves. And that sometimes that voice can be turned inward towards ourselves, or it can be turned outward, sort of towards blame, towards defensiveness, towards judgment, towards criticism of other people to try and inflate our sense of self, or towards ourselves. So I think that element of compassion that you started bringing in is really important. And I also really love that you brought in two very concrete practices that people can use either with an inquiry peer or in their own life, or with a coach, a facilitator, a life alignment practitioner, for example, to help with some of the freeing from of these like painful self-beliefs, of these painful feelings. Because, you know, there's a lot of talk on these conferences and in general of that importance of awareness. And it's so true. But sometimes we get to the point where we're like, okay, I'm aware. Now what? How do I actually break these toxic cycles? How do I actually free myself of these patterns and not just keep repeating these same unhealthy loops in my life, right? How do I kind of notice that all these areas of imbalance and actually find balance again? So I think it's great that you've brought in some very practical tools, and that again, that, you know, whilst those tools are useful to start off with a coach, a teacher, a guide, a mentor, a facilitator, a practitioner, that there's also a lot there that can be done on oneself or by on one's own, or with a peer, or, you know, a friend, a partner, whoever it may be. So I think that's fantastic work. And it's really great to hear more about this like life alignment practice, which I knew a little bit less about than the inquiry practice, and the ways that you know, can work with other people and can work on yourself to really release both the feeling and the belief together and understand where they came from and then let them go. So for people who are interested in doing some of that work and in finding more about you and your work, how can they do that?
Right. You can contact me at Supernatural Health. So, on the website, there then is a sign up form where you can watch a little video that goes into a little bit more detail about what I do, or you can email me there. Or of course you can connect with me on LinkedIn or Instagram. I'm actually launching a group program in the new year, which actually will be for women, but really exploring these issues of toxic relationship with oneself and finding, kind of like how you can find balance and harmony and manage your stress and your self-care. But I do also, I'm going to be offering some workshops. I'm offering a retreat next year in Bali at a wellness resort with a friend of mine who's also a naturopath. And do some one-to-one work. So yeah, I welcome you to. Oh, and I also work with medicinal mushrooms. So there's a YouTube video on mycotherapy that I did with CNM, College of Natural Medicine. And that's a good place to learn more about medicinal mushrooms, which is also something that I incorporate as part of self-care, because they can be amazing for helping balance the nervous system, balancing, you know, hormones, stress management, sleep management, inflammation, all things that are, kind of core factors of when we are, you know, trying to find harmony in ourselves.
Absolutely. And we'll be talking more about medicinal mushrooms together at the next Trauma Super Conference. So I recommend people sign up to that as well. Hanya, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a fantastic conversation.
Thank you so much, Jai. Great to do this with you.